and welcome to episode 54 of Popcorn Optional, a weekly movie podcast where we talk all things movies. And this week, we are here to review a throwback to maybe the most relevant movie of the 1990s, and that is The Truman Show starring Jim Carrey. My name is Cameron Salina, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jake Brown and Trevor Allison.
I don't know if "as always" is an appropriate phrase, but yeah, we're here this time.
We are all, here.
I'm not 100% healthy, but
I think
I'm
this
here.
Is the first time that we've all been on the same episode since like April. No, we did 2001: A Space Odyssey together.
Y'all, this has been like the busiest month of my life.
Yeah, you've had a bunch of production stuff.
Too much. So. I said yes to too many things. Rookie mistake.
We have a couple of news items and trailers to get to. We're going to do our segment of honorable mentions. We're going to do a new episode of The Truman Show. And then, as always, we will end with our content of the week. But first of all, let's get into some news. One of the items that kind of came up recently was the news that Kelly Marie Tran, who plays Rose Tico in Star Wars The Last Jedi, has recently left Instagram. And there's a lot of speculation as to why she did it. There's talk is, you know, she said that she's not a huge fan of social media as it is. She's always been nervous to get on social media just because of the reaction to her. A couple of news sources, Birth Movies Death and Polygon, have both reported and shown screenshots of some Star Wars fans leaving nasty comments on seemingly everyday pictures of hers. So
fans, in quotes.
Yes, Star Wars fans. We kind of wanted to bring this up because while this may not be, you know, the most pressing of news, you know, like, say, Jared Leto being in his own Joker film for the fifth DC Joker film, because, you know, that's important news, I guess. But this is...
Talk about jokes.
This is more of a news item or a topic that we need to... or that we just want to talk about because it's one that's kind of toxic and we feel it's necessary to talk about. So Star Wars fandom is running rampant in bad ways.
Yeah. This is a bummer, and like I understand her comments of like social media hesitancy in general. I feel like every week I debate, should I delete my Instagram? Should I delete my Facebook? But then how will I get work? So I don't know. Back and forth. Social media is a unnecessary / necessary evil in the world that we live in, which we will talk more about, I'm sure, with Truman Show. But this is just... this shows fandom gone wrong. This shows what happens when people take too much ownership in something that isn't theirs and then like get hurt when it's not what they expect. And
well, and also it's fine to dislike something.
Yeah.
That's completely okay. You can dislike whatever you want.
But have an educated opinion.
Like, go out of your way to be a jerk to someone, and I use jerk as like the nicest word I could possibly use in this instance. Like, there are many words not podcast appropriate that are more appropriate to describe these kind of humans.
Yeah.
Their behavior. Right.
Yeah.
But I just don't understand. Like, also independent of it being awful, like, it doesn't make sense. She just like showed up for an audition and delivered a few lines.
Right. If anything, she is like us in this situation. She is the fan of the series who ended up being a part of it. Like, that's the coolest thing. We should be applauding her. And not only that, but like what her character stands for and the arc that her character goes through is so great and meaningful to the Star Wars series as a whole that it's completely counter to everything that's these people are spouting. And if these people think that Star Wars is about hate, and I mean, these are the people who are like, it makes me think of How I Met Your Mother when Barney's like, in Karate Kid, I root for Cobra Kai. And it's like, these are the people who watch Star Wars
Boo.
And were like, Darth Maul was the good guy. Or, you know, Vader had a good point when he talked about bringing peace to the galaxy. And it's just like, oh, you're missing the point.
I mean, I will say though, to Trevor's point, like, I am one of the people that don't like the character of Rose Tico. Like, I think that arc with Finn and John Boyega's character is by far the worst part of the movie. And I understand the frustration in the aspect of the storytelling in the film, but you have to recognize it's storytelling in a film.
Right.
Like, this isn't... yes, it's Star Wars and you love Star Wars, but like you guys said, if anything, be mad at Ryan Johnson be mad at Kathleen Kennedy? And even though you can be mad at those people, it makes no sense to go after them as people. Like, right. they're just doing work. Can you imagine someone coming to these sad people's lives, like their daily office life, and they're just like, you're the worst salesman I've ever seen in my life, and you've ruined salesmanship for every person that ever has known a salesman. Like, what is wrong with you?
Right. Like, if you have legitimate complaints about The Last Jedi, great. If you think it's too jokey, if you think the Canto Bite scenes are bad, great. That's fine. There are healthy places to voice that, but to go to somebody's Twitter and berate them constantly just because they played a character in a movie, those are people that have nothing good to do with their time, and it's so irritating because, like, who are these people that are that upset that, like, I can't even, like, most times in life I can get on the same wavelength as certain ideas, or I can, like, okay, I kind of see where you're coming from. I cannot understand somebody who just sits around and is like, you know what? Kelly Marie Tran just posted a picture of her riding a bike. I'm going to go tell her that she's worthless.
Triggered.
Right? It's the irony here is that, and whether you like the character or the story arc or not, and I'm kind of indifferent on it, but this character is so full of light and positivity and sincerity that it's a very bizarre singular one to pick out, and almost like because of that, to me, like, this has to be racist and or misogynistic.
Yeah
because to pick out this specific character who, like, whether it adds a lot to the film or not, it's not a bad thing to have a character who, like I said, is just so positive and full of life, which is not something we always get from Star Wars necessarily.
Yeah.
It's really ironic that it came for this character.
Yeah. Last thing I'll say about this fandom thing, and you guys can say whatever you want after this, is this obviously is a problem that isn't just with Star Wars. I mean, just recently, a couple months ago, Finn Wolfhard, I think his name is, the kid in Stranger Things, had to, like, berate adults for sneaking into the hotel he was staying at and, like, trying to take pictures of him. And he's like a 13, 14 year old kid. And, like, he had to say, like, yo, I'm a kid. Like, I play a character in this show, but I'm still a child. So please leave me alone. I think that just goes to, like, these are people that are trying to make a living with their talents. And that's really what it comes down to. Like, yes, you could dislike their work, but separate the work from the person. Like, dislike the character, don't dislike the actress.
I also think this teaches us that people who don't read comic books don't know how to handle a bad entry in a series.
Or people who just...
There's no single comic book character run that's had a great issue every issue. I just read some real stinkers in Batman. And, I mean, Batman is the best. His comics are the best. But... I mean, I don't like find Jim Starlin on Twitter and be like, hey, Jim Starlin, this story you wrote with a samurai ghost as the bad guy is garbage. You should burn all of your pencils or something. Like, it just doesn't, I mean, I kind of joke about the comic book thing, but I really do think that this is sort of only something that happens. No, not only, but this is exacerbated by us having these continual series and universes where people feel, like you were saying, Jake, more and more like it belongs to them, the more and more of it that exists.
Right. It's that entitlement. And I feel like, you know, in the past, if you didn't like something, like, okay, let's say you loved Predator, and then Predator 2 comes out, and you're like, the heck is this? And you want to go send mean tweets to Danny Glover. Well, back in the 80s and 90s, that wasn't a thing. Like, you didn't have the ability to do that.
You had to buy a stamp.
Right. You had to, which is even more
who
awkward.
Who wants to do that?
Yeah. And so it's this entitlement of people who, not to pass judgment, but this is at least my perception, is that people who don't have lives get to hold these characters as if they're their own, and then they get this entitlement over these. And so then when things don't work out their way, they throw a hissy fit like a 2-year-old, and they, instead of, you know, screaming and pounding their fists on the ground, scream and pound their fists on Twitter or Instagram and grossly inappropriate ways. So, Star Wars fans, get your act together. This series isn't yours. It's okay to not like something and still like the series as a whole. Just look at Fast and the Furious 4.
Look at Survivor season 22. I mean,
no, 22 was a good season. This most recent season was bad. 36 was bad. I will contest to that. Ugh. Actually, 22 might have been bad. If 22 was a season that Fabio won, it was a bad season. But
so I need to tell our listeners that what I told you guys the other day, that I was at a local breakfast burrito place here, and there was a woman sitting at a table by herself watching an old season of Survivor on her computer, just chilling on a Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. So Cam's not the only person that watches it.
Yep. I think I've made it.
There's dozens of us.
Dozens. Yeah. There are the 36 of us that watch the show have a very, very rich forum online. It's a close-knit community for those of us that watch it. But
is your avatar a Pontiac Aztec?
It's actually just a picture of, it's me photoshopped on someone's body, like a really jacked guy, and then Jeff snuffing out my torch. It's been a dream of mine for about 15 years now, so we'll see if it ever happens. But yeah, that's all we have for the unfortunate talk of Star Wars fandom. Now, in the past 2 days, I'm not kidding, June 4th and June 5th, there were 8 trailers that dropped. There's 2 that we're not even talking about tonight. There's White Boy Rick with Matthew McConaughey about the youngest FBI informant of all time. And then there's a new Oscar Isaac film about trying to find one of Hitler's lieutenants called Operation Final or something like that, I believe, that we're not talking about either. And I'm not kidding. There are 6 other trailers that I at least feel are worth mentioning and casually bringing up. How long we talk about them is another thing. There's a new Bumblebee trailer starring Hayley Stanfield, Bumblebee, and then there was another actor. I couldn't see who it was. He kind of popped up quickly. Most times people just can't see him. So anybody? Anybody? John Cena? Can't see me? There we go.
Man,
Cena plays the bad guy, I think, in this movie. Is this a movie that got you guys at all interested in Transformers or this trailer?
So I had 2 things. One, I think this might be the first watchable Transformers since the first one.
Ooh.
I don't know if it's going to be good. I think it might be watchable. Also, I was like, what's this? A female lead in a Michael Bay movie? Nope, he didn't direct it. It's Travis Knight.
Yep. Son of Phil Knight.
Who did the great Kubo and the Two Strings.
Yeah. I just don't care. Like,
yeah. Right?
I really don't care what you do or what direction you take this franchise in. I'm just so checked out of Transformers. And this looks like it's trying to be like a crossover of like Iron Giant and Shape of Water, yeah. Kind of. Like,
yeah, was there like a love angle?
I don't know,
going
man.
On between
there was like a underwater face grabbing thing. I was like, no, stop it, not again.
Yeah, she was. Yeah.
All right, what are the
undercarriage?
What's
undercarriage
the
face grabbing?
What's the odds that there's a kissing scene? Like at some point, she kisses Bumblebee.
That would be less weird than having sex with a fish 2 minutes after you meet him. So
it was
I'm
the 80s.
Say 30%.
Yeah,
30%. Okay.
I'm gonna say 5%.
I am glad he's actually a beetle. That
yeah.
I mean, at least we're sort of sticking to the canon on this.
Yeah, it's just such a weird like.
Just don't care.
I feel like this is their last effort of going, and maybe we're all wrong. Maybe we see this and it's like, okay, the problem all along was Michael Bay. We actually got a decent director in here this time, and wow, look, there's actually a story to go along with these cool action scenes, and it's good.
But also the thing is, they just straight up canceled the next one.
Yeah,
they
so
didn't
that's
like
not
push it back.
Sign.
They just canceled it.
Yeah,
did not know that.
Yeah, so. And, you know, it comes at the convenient time of December 21st, so Merry Christmas to us all. We will be doing a Christmas episode on that this year, so.
We'll go see that and Aquaman.
Oof.
And everything.
We're just going to hate watch. We're going to spend a whole day over Christmas break hate watching movies at the theater, so. Just to bring our few followers.
God bless us, everyone.
All right, moving on to a more exciting film, at least I thought more exciting, the Lego Movie part, the second part. And this one, you know, every time I feel like I count, and I know that Lord and Miller aren't directing it, but I know that they helped write the screenplay and they're producing it. I feel like every time I think of Lord and Miller and I go, you know, this one's just not going to work. Like, man, you know, 22 Jump Street's not going to work. It's just, the first one was good. They always shock me. And so I'm not going to count this one out, but it's just kind of was one of those trailers that I was like, meh, okay. This is almost the thing that, like, I don't need to see the trailer and I'll probably go see it anyways.
Yeah.
Lord and Miller do this thing where it's always funny. That's how they make it work.
That's also, the thing. That's their secret thing.
How many things work only because they're funny, right?
Right.
But also, I think they dig into a little bit of that Pixar thing of, like, everybody is a hero or everybody can be a hero.
Yeah.
And I think they do a pretty good job with that. Also, we need more animated post-apocalyptic movies. So I approve of this.
Yeah, there are some funny bits in this. The whole Mad Max angle that they're going with and contrasting Emmett and his brightness against that is fun. I'll be curious to see how long they try and keep that gag going for.
I love that Emmett is just Andy Dwyer.
Yes. Yeah, full on. But there's just so many great characters in this that it's hard not to think that it's going to be good. And there's so many great people behind the scenes. So that's the Lego movie the second part, coming out February 8th, 2019. The next up is Wreck-It Ralph Breaks the Internet. And this maybe has the most, well, it's one of those things where I feel like they should have kept it for the movie, but there's a scene in this that's... not to step on Marvel's toes, but maybe the most ambitious crossover of all time.
Let's talk about how that's like an Oscar-worthy short film. that 25-second bit with the Disney princesses. That is so good.
Is there like a section of Disney? And for the reference, what we are talking about is there's a scene where it's all the Disney princesses, and then Vanellope von Schweetz comes in and they're asking her if she's a princess and running her through all these questions, interviewing her. And eventually she comes to a point where she is a princess through a funny random series of questions. I'm curious, is there like a section of Disney fandom who's going to freak out over 2D animation characters being put into like computer animation scenes? Like, is there somebody out there who's gonna be like, you know what? Pocahontas should have always stayed 2D.
Yeah, and it's the person that hates Rosemary or Rose Tico.
Yeah.
It's what Jake talks about. It follows the rules set up for the Wreck-It Ralph universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? It wouldn't make any sense if they were 2D. This looks hilariously self-referential. If you guys remember, when I watched the Emoji Movie, I told you that there was like a little nugget of something interesting here as like a commentary about technology and stuff. And I swear, someone watched the Emoji Movie that's involved at Disney Animation and was like, F this, we'll make it way better. And that's what this is.
I was about to say, because that was my curiosity after watching the trailer, was this looks a lot like the Emoji Movie, but hopefully a little better.
Yeah, more big brand names. They have Amazon and Google.
And Star Wars and Marvel.
Right. Whoever made the Emoji Movie doesn't have the clout that Disney does. I can't remember right now.
Is it Illumination?
It was weird, though, watching the trailer. It was like, wait, is this like some sort of marketing for like an online Disney video game experience that they're building? It was just
that I want to sign up for.
It was like so much Disney meta that I didn't really know what to do with it.
Yeah.
It's the spiritual sequel to Enchanted.
It always makes me think of the season finale of Community when it's Troy eats a whole cookie cake and then he realizes that too much of a good thing can be a bad thing. And so is too much Disney a bad thing? Is too much...
Was that the first time you learned that concept?
Yes. I did not understand that until my freshman year of college. And then I watched that episode after like my finals and I was like, too much of a good thing is a bad thing. Dang it. I've been doing life wrong. So, all right. Well, that's Wreck-It Ralph Breaks the Internet. Not Wreck-It Ralph Wrecks the Internet, as he says in the trailer. Coming out November 21st, 2018. The next up is the new film from Steve McQueen, who directed 12 Years a Slave and Shame. And it's called Widows. And it has an incredible cast. I mean, there's a who's who almost of like the big guys, actors and actresses nowadays.
John Bernthal about to win the award again for being in 5 minutes of a movie.
Yeah.
That man acts the crap out of 5 minutes in movies like nobody else.
That's very true.
You got Viola Davis, Michelle Rodriguez, Elizabeth Debicki, Cynthia Erivo, Colin Farrell. You have Brian Tyree Henry, who's apparently in everything this year. He's in White Boy Rick, which comes out this year as well. And then he's also in Hotel Artemis, which comes out this week. So one of the stars of Atlanta doing big things. This trailer is incredible. Did you guys get a chance to watch this one?
Yeah, I watched it like 10 minutes ago. And, you know, Steve McQueen is one of those directors that makes a movie like once every 5 years, but you know it's going to be amazing. And this is no exception to that rule. And it's also such an interesting premise. Like the widows of bank robbers. Like, that's something that hasn't really been explored before. And I'm really excited to see it. And yeah, like you said, Cameron, this is the best of the best in Hollywood. And it's exciting to see like the level of talent, the level of diversity in this film from different ages, races, like genders, taking on awesome roles like that are totally outside of the general character archetypes. So I'm super excited for this.
Yeah. My reaction for the second time in this podcast, man, I'm really the bad one today. My reaction to this is like not suitable for work. As I was watching this, like the words I was saying, like, good Lord. Although I will say the past few movies I've seen with trailers like this didn't quite live up to it. So I'm kind of cautious on that, but I think Steve McQueen is the real deal. As are several of the people in this, especially I'm very here for Viola Davis being a heist ringleader. That's going to be fun. I think this is going to be good.
This almost, if you were to just look at it from a glance and not necessarily take into account like Steve McQueen's involvement, this almost looks like a Viola Davis Taken type thing where it's like an older actor or actress getting into action thriller type thing. But then you add the fact that Steve McQueen's involved and you're like, okay, that adds a whole different level and lens for us to kind of view this through. So that's Widows. That is coming out later this year, November 16th, and we'll probably have a very nice little Oscar run going into the holiday season. Lastly, is the new trailer for the Peter Jackson produced, based on the novel of the same name, Mortal Engines. What did you guys think of this trailer? Because I've read this book. Let me say this. The plot of the book is very simple and kind of doesn't do the idea justice. The idea is a really rich, wonderful idea, but it's kind of bogged down by this boring plot. So was this trailer enough to get you guys interested in like this story?
No.
Okay.
I watched this and I was just like, what the, like, awesome idea. This belongs in the Mad Max universe and like end of story. Just put this idea in Mad Max, leave it alone. Like, there's just so many things happening. It felt like, what's that film? Like Stardust or something that came out? Like,
yeah.
Pirates and space, but also like giant ships, and it was not very good. So I don't like this.
Yeah, I didn't see the new trailer, but this, I don't know what this is. I think it's an interesting concept, but it just doesn't look like it's going to be interesting.
Peter Jackson's one of those people for me that he's kind of earned a lifetime pass of all. Check out whatever he does because he directed my favorite movies of all time in the Lord of the Rings series.
He had it for me, and then The Hobbit came out, and I'm like a hard pass on most Peter Jackson stuff, now, sadly.
That's fair. And I was interested in the story as it was just because of having read the book or listened to the book on audio tape. But yeah, I was kind of curious to see what an outsider's perspective of this would be. I'm not sold that this trailer would get anybody that's not already interested on it based on the source material interested in it because of this trailer. There's nothing in this that's like, wow, I have to go see this movie. So I don't know. It's amazing to me that they made this for $100 million though. All right, that is all we have. That's coming out December 14th, so there'll be a hot time at the end of the year there. We're going to do a segment of honorable mentions now, though. This is a segment that we like to do from time to time where we nominate people who we feel are above and beyond. And what we mean by that is if you were to only know one thing about a movie and it was that this person is involved, is that enough to make you want to go see it? Like, so if all you knew about a movie was that Jim Carrey was involved, is that enough? You don't know who the plot, you don't know anything about the plot. You don't know who the director is. You don't know who wrote it. All you know is Jim Carrey's acting. Is that enough to make you go see it? We've nominated people in the past before. Some have gotten in, some have been denied. You know, people like Spielberg, Julie Louis-Dreyfus, Michael B. Jordan, Donald Glover, Alex Garland, Bill Murray, Leonardo DiCaprio, just to name a few, are all people that are honorable mentions. And here tonight, we are here to nominate the 14th class. To get in, you must be a unanimous vote. We must all agree, and you must have been in or worked on more than 5 films. So let's go ahead and get the 14th class of honorable mentions underway. Jake?
All right. My nominee is someone who's been in the entertainment industry since the 60s. I just tallied it up. He has over 415 credits on his IMDb page. He has some of my favorite roles and some of the funniest TV shows and movies to come out in a really long time. And I would say he's having a bit of a renaissance or a comeback the past like 5 to 10 years. And that is none other than Henry Winkler.
Oh my goodness.
Oh man. So I never really watched Happy Days. so I only know the Arrested Development.
Parks and Recreation.
Parks and Rec.
Click, he's in all Barry. The Adam Sandler films he's in.
Yep. Yeah. He's been in Barry.
Oh, is that what made you want to check this out? Was his stuff in Barry?
He's phenomenal in Barry. Like, incredible. He does a bunch of voice work. He's been in, like, I think he's one of the greatest character actors ever. He's in, like, every show for at least, like, a couple episodes.
Strangely enough, I think I want to say yes, because it's just interesting. You don't know what he's going to do or who he is, or I don't know. This is a weird one.
This is weird because what did we dub the title of, like, the Allison Janneys and Rowan Atkinsons, who are people that we like and we love to see in movies, but maybe aren't enough to make us go see the movie strictly because of them. I don't know if he falls into that, because Henry Winkler is at such a point in his career that it's almost like if he does something, I'm so interested in it because it's like, well, he's so great. Do I want to check it out just because of him? I was going through his IMDb and then I saw the last couple of films he was in, one of which being Sandy Wexler and Here Comes the Boom, where Kevin... what's his name? Kevin James becomes a UFC fighter while being a teacher.
All right. I think I have to say no, because no. Because there's literally no one else that could have been in that movie that would make me want to go see it.
Yeah. I would say no in that, because I love him. I think he's great. But would I go see a movie strictly because of him? No, I don't think so.
What about a TV show?
Is he... now we're getting to a whole different thing. Because is he
has
every
two
episode?
Golden Globes. For some of them, yeah. He has multiple Golden Globes, Emmys.
I think he's great and he's a legend, but he's not an honorable mensch.
All right.
With the stipulations we've put on it.
Yeah.
Fine. You know,
maybe in the Harrison Ford category, kind of.
Yeah. I still cannot believe
Harrison Ford, you know. We mentioned that last week. Did you notice that?
Yeah, and you guys are wrong. Same with Allison Janney, Oscar winner.
I feel Allison like Janney. Jake's the one of us that, like, goes for the adventurous pull, and I should say, like, we've done the list of, like, the obvious choices. You know, the Alfonso Cuarons, the Tom Hanks, the Roger Deakins, Emma Stone. Like, we've gone through the list of the big names. And so now we're getting into, like, some personal favorites. And I feel like we're at a point now where it's like, we're going to get to some more hotly contested names. And yeah, Jake, sorry. You're always the adventurous person with your choices, yeah. And I respect that.
Shooters got to shoot, you know?
To quote Shea
Serrano.
That's
what it comes down to. That's what it comes down to.
There we go. All right, Trevor, your pick for tonight.
Here's a controversial pick that I'm sure you guys will tear down. And I want you to focus on her high highs instead of her low lows. Ooh. And I'm going to be very embarrassed if she's already on the list or have already been talked about. But it is Oscar winner Anne Hathaway.
She has not been on the list, to my knowledge.
Okay. Mm. And I want you to think about her tears in Les Mis as you're thinking about whether she belongs.
Cameron,
I'll go ahead because
I have thoughts.
I'm trying to look up a stat really quick. I think that she holds the record for the least amount of time on screen and winning an Oscar. Anthony Hopkins is higher.
Yeah, Anthony Hopkins.
No,
yeah.
She has less time than Anthony Hopkins. She's in 15 minutes. He's in 16 minutes of Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, okay.
So she has less time than him.
She's only in the first act, really. It's two acts, but.
Okay, I don't get the Anne Hathaway backlash. I'm a big fan of Anne Hathaway, and I think that she's done a lot of great work. She is one of the few good parts of The Dark Knight Rises, and yes, I mean that because I do not think that that is a good film, and I think that she saves a lot of that film and with her work as Catwoman. She's great in Les Mis, as Trevor referenced. I'm curious. I mean, I just watched Princess Diaries the other day, funny enough. And she's fantastic in that, especially, you know, the second one with the best Chris Pine.
She was 19 in the Princess Diaries.
Yeah. She was also in. Did you guys see The Intern with Robert De Niro that came out a couple years ago?
No, I didn't.
That's just a heartfelt. That's just a good film. That's just one of them make you happy.
See, I would say that she doesn't always choose the best roles, as we've talked about with some other people, but I think that she's always pretty good.
Yes. Like, I didn't necessarily like Colossal that came out last year, but she was fantastic in that role. I'm a yes on Anne Hathaway.
I definitely see her as one of those people that I respect more than I like. In terms of that, like, I definitely, when I watch her, I always recognize this is a fantastic performance by a fantastic actor. Does she draw me to the theater or draw me to films? I don't know if that's a yes or a no, but I will say she doesn't make me be like, oh, Anne Hathaway's in that. I'm not going to see that because Anne Hathaway's in that. What does she have coming up?
She's got our film that we're reviewing next week, Ocean's 8.
Hmm.
There's also something that's been announced called Live Fast, Die Hot. So,
oh, that
I don't know what that is.
Terrible.
I don't know what it is either, but it's on her IMDb page.
Oh man, and she's in a Barbie film, maybe.
I think she is Barbie.
Oh God.
But I think that's a very, like, tongue-in-cheek type Barbie film. Like, Amy Schumer was originally supposed to play Barbie.
Oh, God.
which gets to my nomination for the night.
Jeez, that's terrible. Yeah, sorry to drag this out. I'm going to do what I did with Daisy Ridley. And I'm going to see how Ocean's 8 comes along and how she is in that before. So I'm going to... what's it called?
Put her on pending.
I'm gonna put her on the pending list.
Okay.
I'm gonna abstain.
Oh, please.
For this week, because I don't jump to conclusions like some people do on this podcast.
I don't think anybody jumped to conclusions on this podcast, but okay.
Yeah, but no, I like Anne Hathaway. I respect her. I don't know if she's honorable mensch quality for me. But
honorary.
We'll see what Ocean's 8 does.
That's
she might
be
on the honorary list with Henry Winkler, Harrison Ford, and Allison Janney as the worst person on that list.
And Bill Hader. I just realized that one.
Yeah, Bill Hader too.
Yeah.
You guys,
I feel kind of bad about the Bill Hader one.
You have to watch Barry. Because if you watch Barry, you will put Bill Hader and Henry Winkler on the top of the honorable mention list.
You know what? I'm going to put Bill Hader on the pending list. Pending.
Watch Barry, and he will be on your honorable mention list.
Okay, I'm putting him on the pending
list. The dude is amazing in that series.
Okay. I am putting him on the pending list. Okay. All right. So we have one honorary in Henry Winkler and one pending Ocean's 8 for Anne Hathaway. So I have two choices, one of which I'm scared to nominate because I don't know how many of this director's films you guys have seen, and I want to give him his due. And then the other one's an actress.
I've seen all of them.
You've seen all of them. Oh, Jake's seen all the movies. I forgot. gosh darn, that's good.
I mean, a lot of this exercise is about perception anyway, so
yeah.
Oh,
might as well go for it.
Wait, no, he only has four films that he's directed. Never mind, I can't nominate him. So there we go. We'll have to wait till his next film. Okay, so then my other choice is an actress who we've talked about one of her movies very recently, like within the past 5 minutes, to one of our favorite TV characters of all time. She has recently done a stretch of action films that she has been fantastic in, and she is none other than Emily Blunt.
Yeah. You know, like 2 years ago, I would have said no, but she's had a really good past couple of years.
Yeah.
And Emily Blunt, I think, is... I see Emily Blunt as where Anne Hathaway's career should have gone. Like, she has made every right decision, and even films that, like, have underperformed, like Edge of Tomorrow / Live, Die, Repeat / Fire That Marketing Director.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. She is incredible in that film. She gives, I think, the performance of the year so far in A Quiet Place. And, you know, I don't care at all about Mary Poppins, but the fact that she's in Mary Poppins, I'm like, Mary Poppins.
My wife and I were talking about this the other day. She's the only person that they could have cast in that role.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like no one else even, I don't see who else like brings the legitimacy to that role that she does.
I feel like she's the actress who every studio is trying to get. Like every studio right now is going like, well, if we could get Emily Blunt, that'd be great. But if not, let's get somebody like Emily Blunt. She's that actress right now who everybody's like, we need an Emily Blunt type, even if we can't get her directly.
Yeah. So for me, she is a yes.
I agree. I loved her in Looper.
Yeah.
I think she's great in The Adjustment Bureau, which is a movie that makes me sad because it could have been good, but it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a Philip K. Dick idea?
Yes. Yes, it is. Okay. The movie was a little thin and a big disappointment. Great premise. Great idea. Anyway,
the performance that kind of seals it for me is her performance in Sicario.
Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah. So
yeah. Also in Devil Wears Prada, fantastic in that.
There we go.
As we just talked about, like you said, Cam, which that's low key a really good movie.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if people talk about it like it deserves to be.
Yeah.
Also sister-in-law to Stanley Tucci.
And married to John Krasinski.
Who could be a future honorable mention if his career keeps panning out the way it looks like it might.
If he keeps making good movies, right.
If he goes the Ben Affleck route, maybe not. But if, you know, if he kind of goes between this Ben Affleck, if he kind of gets away from the Michael Bay route that he could be on, less 13 hours.
What you're saying is that 8 years from now, you don't want to see John Krasinski playing an aging Peter Parker?
No, I don't.
Mm.
Also, I don't want him getting some weird Phoenix back tattoo after divorcing his wife. That's a big no.
Oh, all right. All that to say, yes on Emily Blunt.
Okay, cool. Good to know. All right. So to recap on the 14th class of honorable mentions, Emily Blunt is an honorable mensch. Anne Hathaway is pending. We are going to wait and see after next weekend on Ocean's 8. And then honorary is Henry Winkler. So, Jake, we're sorry. I feel like we keep just denying Jake, so.
You know what? I'm sorry for you guys that you aren't as open-minded as I am.
Emily Blunt's next movie is The Jungle Cruise, based on the ride at Disney World.
Yeah, with Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Which I want to laugh at, but Pirates of the Caribbean was good, so maybe they can pull something out of this.
I think I think it's got potential. I mean, Dwayne The Rock Johnson just made Jumanji good. So
he always makes like three different versions of the same movie, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He plays the same character in every movie.
Yeah, he did San Andreas. Right, of course. And then he did Rampage, or not Rampage, and then he was doing Skyscraper. He's a man of threes.
Rampage is like in between Skyscraper and Jumanji.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's...
The guy does one character, but fortunately that character is every action archetype. So.
Right. Good, I just want to see a film where him and John Cena face off. I think that would be...
That's called the WWE. Ooh. That's what that's called.
Okay. Okay.
What if they were like rival stand-up comedians?
Oh my God. That's the best idea ever.
Oh my goodness. That would be incredible if it was John Cena and Dwayne The Rock Johnson as stand-up comedians.
You need to start writing this now.
Trevor, tweet Judd Apatow this second. Or James Franco or somebody. I don't know why I said James Franco.
This does seem like it goes in the... It would be like written and produced by the Franco Rogan crew.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. Oh my gosh, that'd be so good. Man, now I'm going to spend the rest of this episode dreaming about a John Cena, Dwayne Johnson stand-up comedy movie.
This has maybe been our longest intro section ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. Let's go ahead and get on to our review of The Truman Show, the classic 1998 film starring Jim Carrey, directed by Peter Weir, written by Andrew Niccol, of all people, which is incredible that he did Gattaca 1 year and then put out this the next year.
I mean, this is basically a sci-fi, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. it's a much beloved film. It's probably one of the most, as we said earlier, it references so much of society today. And we'll get into that a little bit. But let's go ahead and just give our general thoughts on The Truman Show.
I can appreciate this movie because it is exactly what it wanted to be. And I don't think that happens for as many movies as we think. Just overall, the layers to this, the commentary that it brings, the discussions that you can have about it are just as important as the whole thing. I think this is one of the best Jim Carrey performances, and that he does his penchant for physical comedy, but in a darkly serious kind of way at points that's very impressive. This is a movie. It still plays just as well 20 years later, which is impressive to say. And so, yeah, I think I respect it a little bit more than I like it, but this is a really good movie.
I love this movie. This is like top 20 films for me. I might have even had this on my top 10, but I don't remember. But the commentary on today's society, how ahead of its time this film was, the way this film is shot, Jim Carrey's performance, this script is fantastic, and it really does define our generation in so many different ways, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I also just love like the conversations that it starts of, just like my favorite lines, and this is we accept the reality of the world that we are given. We see only what we want to see. Nothing is fake. It's merely controlled. Mm-hmm. Like that is just so spot on for not only the like cultural society we live in, but the political society, our own lives. I mean, this is I think one of the best movies from the 90s by far. And also I think one of the most timely films right now. This is Jim Carrey's best work in my opinion, by a long shot.
Yeah. I grew up watching some Jim Carrey stuff, Pet Detective, Liar Liar, all that kind of stuff. And so I have a special place in my heart for Jim Carrey. I think he's an incredibly talented guy who doesn't get enough credit for the work that he's done. And this film is just fantastic. Yeah, I think I'm with Jake. I think it was on my top 20. I don't think it made my top 10 when we did our very first episode. But, man, what an incredible film and what an achievement as far as predicting the future. I think one of the funniest things to watch this film now and look back at is, you know, at the time they presented reality and this reality television of being filmed all the time as such a negative and controlled thing. And now it's something that you see so many people seeking out. They want this. They want the camera to be on them 24/7. They want everybody to know everything about them, their lives. They want to be on social media and put all this out there. And it's almost a flip of the message of what the movie's trying to say as far as having this camera in your face all the time. And I think, you know, it comes at an interesting point in Carrey's career of, you know, having been at the rise of his career. He's at like the peak of his career at this time, and he's making a commentary about what it's like to constantly be on camera. It's almost like, you know, PTA making The Master at the height of his career and kind of mocking fans is constantly wanting things from him. And it's just an incredible piece of storytelling. There are parts of it that falter, but I think ultimately those falters don't get in the way of the success that is Jim Carrey and this idea. This is one of those, we talk a lot about like ideas. Well, to go with another Peter Weir film, In Time, starring Justin Timberlake and Amanda Seyfried. Great idea, terrible execution. This is a great idea that has great execution, and that's sometimes very rare, unfortunately.
Yeah, and this script apparently went through like 35 different versions before they got to the shoot. Like the original version was like way more bleak and dystopian, was in like New York City, and there was a crew just like secretly following him around. Instead of this like idyllic town totally built around like Truman's life.
Yeah.
So it went through so many different iterations.
Right. I think it was originally written like 10 years before it got made.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. And then part of it was that the studio didn't believe in the film and they didn't want to give it the $80 million budget that they wanted. And so they gave it a $60 million budget. And that's when they kind of retailored things to be like, okay, let's just shoot in this small little seaside town. We won't spend as much money. And, you know, from there came the whole idea of, okay, well, what would it look like? How would we keep him in this area? Like, why would he want to stay in this small town? And, you know, the whole idea of fear controlling his life and his dad. I mean, I look at this movie now from like the angle of like a dad, and this guy who acted as his dad, maybe not really his dad, being stripped from his life is just the most heartbreaking thing. Let's just talk about this film openly, because there's a lot of great parts of this movie and a lot of things to talk about. If you haven't seen it, we're going to spoil a lot of things. This film came out 20 years ago this weekend. That's why we are reviewing this film now. It came out June 5th, 1998. So actually 20 years ago to the date, when I was 7 years old. Wow, that's weird. So if you haven't seen this movie, go see it. It's well worth your time. But let's go ahead and talk spoilers for The Truman Show. So do you guys remember the first, like, when was your guys' first time watching this? Because I feel like that's going to dictate a lot of how you feel, or like, well, it's going to help us shape the conversation at least a little bit.
For me, it was, I think, in college. I really started to get interested in film and like the great films that I hadn't seen in the past in college. And Truman Show was one of those that I think maybe even like I heard you guys talking about constantly. And I was like, well, maybe I should watch this Truman Show.
And if that's all that I ever amounted to was to get Jake to watch the Truman Show, I will have succeeded.
So success.
I think I saw it in high school. I had some friends who really liked it. I didn't really completely get it at that point. I thought it was impressive and pretty good, but I didn't realize the full weight of it, I guess, until I kind of thought about it later and heard people talking about it. Also, I just saw, and this is a departure, but originally Brian De Palma was going to direct this, which means it would have been very different and not nearly as good. So,
yeah,
glad that didn't happen.
Would have been more depressing,
right? I think this movie ages really well, because as technology gets more advanced, I think it's even more kind of prophetic about the dangers of technology, what they can do to us, what connectedness can do. But it also, I think that the technology piece is important, but I also think the a big importance here is the idea of free will, because we see someone's complete environment manipulated, but yet he's still able to understand, because he's human, that things aren't quite supposed to be like this. And I think that aspect of it kind of gets lost in it, with people talking about the dangers of technology and TV and entertainment. But I think the free will part of this is just as interesting.
Do you guys... So I think I saw this film back in high school, like you, Trevor, and I don't think I fully grasped it at the time. I don't think it was until college that I watched it again and realized how appropriate this is for the world that we are now living in. But this is something that I'm curious. I would love to go back and like look at what people thought about this at the time when it came out. If they were like, man, that's cute. That would never happen in real life. Or if there were people like, wow, that's terrifying. Because 1998 is kind of, you started to get some reality TV. Like, I think like some of the MTV reality TV was going on. You know, the greats like Survivor hadn't started yet. or Keeping Up with the Kardashians, if you're into that kind of thing.
I think, I don't know about regular people, but it was really well reviewed. I know that.
I think, looking through it, like on some of the behind the scenes stuff, it seems like, you know, Roger Ebert claiming that it had the perfect balance of comedy and drama. A lot of people seem to really, really like it.
They were comparing it to like what was happening with Princess Diana at that time. And even like the actors, like the main actors, were talking about it on set. I read about this in like a BTS thing today, about just like how ridiculous of a premise this is, and like how this will never happen in real life. And now we have over 750 reality TV shows on TV.
Did you read an article saying that there were 750 TV reality TV shows?
Yes, that is a actual number, that as of this year, there are over 750 reality TV shows on all the different channels that are available to you.
Did it say how many scripted TV shows there were? Because that, I mean, I would be willing to bet...
There's too much TV.
I'd be willing to bet there's more reality than there is scripted nowadays. It just seems like that's what...
Well, I mean, you have channels like TLC and True TV that... like only do reality.
Right. Like I think everything on E is reality nowadays.
There are like 500-ish scripted TV shows on TV right now. So yeah, reality is higher.
Sidetrack for a second. It's amazing to me that there are 1,250 TV shows on, like, and I could probably name off like 100. So it's like, what are the other 1,100 TV shows that are on right now?
And they are not good.
Yeah. So, okay. So what do you guys think? Because the constant talk about this movie is what's the message that they're trying to get through? Is it a religious basis with, you know, I think there's some very interesting parallels to be drawn there with, you know, Ed Harris's character being named Christoph and kind of being like an off Christ, almost Lucifer type character. And then, you know, Jim Carrey's character obviously being named Truman and being a true man. And so what's going for this film that makes it so connectable to audiences outside of the reality TV element?
I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with just it being a really good script, great performances. The cinematography in this is, I think, super underrated. The way that they were able to play with like the hidden camera tricks, and it's so important to how the story is told. And also like the way that a lot of the scenes are lit like a typical three camera sitcom. It's just so many subtle things that are happening visually that really help sell what's happening, along with the script and the incredible performances.
They were lighting outdoor scenes like they were studios.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In a few shots, which is, I don't know, not easy. Probably, I guess.
No, generally no.
So, I think part of what makes this resonate and what makes this work is it looks like Leave It to Beaver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like one of the things the film's saying is that your nostalgia for a better time when everything was simpler is dumb because it didn't actually exist. Like, there's always something going on. You can't create perfection. It's just the world is what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
The production design along with the cinematography and everything is just perfect. Everything is, nothing feels out of place. Everything feels right within its own universe.
But at the same time, it like feels so wrong, but in the right way. Like a, like you said, a, like a perfect layer of polished bullcrap on
right,
everything.
Like if you set a 24-year-old human adult in this, they would know it was fake immediately.
Right. Yeah. And that, I think that goes to like the theme of the film. Like I said earlier, like you accept the reality of the world that you are given. And I think that's like the thesis to this film. And there's a lot of different directions that you can go in that based on the context of how you're watching it or the time that you watch it in, which is, I think, the brilliance of this film is that you can take this film for an allegory on the present and like our own political, like sociological issues that we have currently. You can take this as a commentary on the rise of surveillance, social media, reality TV. You can take this on a commentary on like seeking contentment in the norm and how we need change. We need new. We need the unknown as human beings.
God manipulating the actions of man.
Yeah. It, I mean, it just does such a good job of like giving you a broad enough theme with high enough production quality and performances to then you can kind of put your own meaning within it based on the context of how you're watching it.
Yeah, it's incredibly impactful for a live action film rated PG.
Right.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think if you guys take everything that you've just talked about and then you anchor it to the performance of Carrie, which if you look at what he'd done up until this point, I mean, it's the previous year to this was Liar Liar, and then you had The Cable Guy, Ace Ventura, Batman Forever, Dumb and Dumber, The Mask. I mean, he had done goofy film after goofy film. And so you have this character who is at the height of his career and is loved by so many people, and then to have him play such a sincere and earnest, down-to-earth person who at the end of the day just wants his dad, just wants the girl that he truly loves. Like, you marry those things together and you get this emotional weight to a story that in a lesser script would be very emotionally unimpactful and kind of distant. But because you're marrying this real-life version of Jim Carrey to this actual on-screen version, you end up with this beautiful emotional ending scene that kind of comes out of nowhere as far as, like, at least for me, like, whenever I watch this film, I'm always shocked by the emotional weight of that ending scene of him just waving goodbye to the camera and shutting the door on everything.
Yeah.
Can we talk for a second about how that it's literally the perfect ending? You can't... The movie doesn't work if you show him outside.
Yeah.
Like you, and also that whole end sequence, the shot of him walking up those stairs to the door,
him running into the end of it and then finding the,
That whole thing. But yeah, I think you can't show, this movie doesn't need like an epilogue.
Right.
Like the end of the story is him leaving, and that's all that matters.
Like you don't need to see Truman and Hannah getting back to, or not Hannah, what's her name?
Sylvia.
You don't need to see them. Hannah's his wife. You don't need to see them actually getting back together because you know the end result. Like, there's no other way other than that. It's also like what cracks me up is when you think about like the world outside of this, in that, like, this would be, if this was a real thing and everybody watched Truman and there was like a Truman Channel and all these things, this would be like the television event of the century. This would be like the royal wedding times the Super Bowl times Game 7 times the final episode of MASH. I mean, it would be like every, like, work would be canceled. It's fun to like imagine that outside world of like, because, and they give you like that perspective of like the people at the diner watching this and they're chatting and they have all this background knowledge. It's almost like the coffee talk of like, or the, not coffee talk, what's the, water cooler talk of, well, did you
and
see?
I think could argue that the film doesn't work without those things either.
No,
right.
Yeah.
Right. I agree. The realest part of this movie is the security guard going, "Hey, what else is on?" that's like, that resonated with me almost as much as anything else.
Yeah.
Just like, we just watched a human's life for 30 years.
Yeah.
And watched him realize what was happening, break out of it, and 30 seconds later you're trying to flip on to what's next.
Yes.
Yeah, that so depressing. that's the most depressing part of the film.
But it's so true.
Because I feel myself doing that sometimes. Like, oh, I just watched this. What else is there to see? What else? Like, I've had to, I made kind of a personal rule that I don't watch more than one movie in a day.
That's a good rule.
I will not watch two movies because it all like it, things start running together in your head the way that the movie is meant to be seen and impacted. I don't like it.
So many times, like Annihilation, when we saw that, I don't remember if I actually saw, or at least for me, it's like I watch a ton of things just like falling asleep or like as I'm working, I have something on in the background. But the good movies for me, at least, always stand with me as like I'll think about them for days after. And every time I watch this movie, I think about it for days after. Like, it's not just like I put it on casually. It's not like I'm trying to think of a movie. Like, it's not like a Fast and the Furious movie, to reference that for the second time this podcast, that I can just put on in the background and watch and enjoy and then like forget about it 5 seconds later. It's a movie that like I have to like consciously think like, okay, this is on, I'm gonna watch it. And then no matter what I watch afterwards, I'm still thinking about it for days after.
It's one of those films that, I mean, like I said before, it just like perfectly embeds itself in your brain in the area that you're like already kind of processing. Like if you're aware of like what's happening politically, it like can go in that direction. Or if you're thinking about like what am I supposed to do? What, like, where is my contentment? Where is my purpose? Like, it can embed itself there. It just so perfectly speaks to so many different people. It really is fascinating.
To go touch on a few things. One, I think that this is a movie that hits you in a different way every time you watch it, depending on where you are in life, to kind of speak to what you were just saying, Jake. And I think that's why, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago, Jake, you brought this up as a movie that would be awful if it was remade. That's why this movie is perfect, because 20 years later, it's just as impactful as it was the day it was made. And like, well, I said earlier, it's only going to get more impactful as we have more of an intrusion of technology and connectedness into our everyday lives.
That's what's weird is like, if you tried, you couldn't remake it in our modern society because, like, I mean, I just said, like, our modern reality TV culture was impeccably predicted by the Truman Show. Like we just said, there are over 750 reality series on TV right now. Obviously, at the center of it all is the Kardashians. And, like, the viewers of that show have literally watched Kylie and Kendall grow up on TV since they were, like, 6 years old. And what's weird is now every person is trying to live out their own version of the Truman Show, as an entire generation seeks out to be YouTube and Instagram stars. And like we've elected a reality TV star president. Like, what's scary is we've gone beyond the Truman Show at this point. And at the end of the film, like, Truman is running away. Truman is running away from the cameras at the end. Like, we run to them currently. But what's like sad, or even like the saddest part of all, is that just like in Truman's world, it's all fake. When you know there's a camera, there is no reality. And like, Truman, in a weird sense, is the only and will, I think, forever only be the one true reality TV star.
It's, I mean, just kind of going off of that, have you guys ever heard of the Truman Delusion?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's one of the more fascinating things to come out of this, is that there's an actual, like, a disease. It's a schizophrenia where people believe that they are being filmed and that their lives are a reality TV show without them knowing. And it was the study by a guy named Joel Gold. And one of the more interesting parts of it, he says some people were rendered happy. Some were tormented. One person traveled to New York to check whether the World Trade Center had actually fallen, believing that the 9/11 attacks to be an elaborate plot twist in his personal storyline.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. What's, I don't know if it's more disturbing. I think it's more disturbing to me of the people that believe that their lives are a reality television show and that they are being filmed and that makes them happy. That for their life to have meaning, that they have to be watched and observed by others to have that same meaning in life. That's kind of, that's the sad part.
And it's happening. And also with like their surveillance state that we have now of like NSA is always listening, FBI has access to your phone and cameras everywhere. I mean, not to get like too conspiracy theory, but what do you guys, I mean, besides like the allegory for modern culture in terms of like our obsession with technology and reality TV, what do you guys think this is about?
I think it's a religious, I think there's a lot of religious metaphors in here.
Yeah, that's kind of the way that I lean also.
Okay.
Especially with like the naming of characters. It's kind of just too, it's too close to it to not take it in that area.
Yeah, I think it's ultimately a humanistic film saying that no matter how, I mean, I don't think it's specifically Christian or anything, but no matter how God or whatever the greater being is tries to control us, we still ultimately have it within ourselves to break free.
This is weirdly, like, when you think about it, an interpretation of the Adam and Eve story.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah. It also, I mean, there are things in it, like the product placement stuff feels a little kind of cultish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At times. There's that kind of thing. And like the high security parts of it feel very cultish.
The other way that I think you could easily take this is that in the 90s, there was a lot of like, that's when people started to become obsessed with like the celebrity magazines and stuff like that, like the People and that kind of thing. And so I think, and especially not to harp on this again, but if you look at, you know, where Jim Carrey is at, I think it's definitely kind of a commentary on people's obsession with wanting to know everything about somebody, no matter how intrusive it ends up being. And that's kind of scary that there are people that are willing to, I mean, because you look at people like stalkers nowadays or paparazzi who just are so into everything about somebody's life that it's almost controlling. And we talked about that earlier with fandom and Star Wars fanboys wanting to ruin people's lives. It's just, it's a weird obsession.
Yeah. I definitely agree with y'all's point about the religious allegory. I think for me, it's a couple potential things. One is that a base level of contentment is not sustainable, and that like, we need change. We need the new, we need the unknown. And that doesn't mean that like happiness is unattainable or whatever, but like Truman's life is just like base level contentment, no change, nothing new, the same routine. That's not sustainable. Another one is in terms of like a political thing. Like Truman is a representation of us as a society, because like our world seems to be having this series of ruptures, and society can only work if we accept the truth we are presented and the world we live in. And our world is like waking up from all this stuff that the establishment has been telling us, not to get like conspiracy theory or whatever. But society's like dominant ideologies are absorbed into the media and education. I don't know. It's just like, I feel like the internet has brought our country and the world as a whole to basically what Truman is experiencing, of we're just like having all these realizations of like, what, this is happening? Oh my gosh, that's ridiculous. So that's one other thing. And then, yeah, the creator versus captor thing, which I think kind of touches on what you guys were just talking about with religion.
All right, well, let's get to our final thoughts and ratings for this film.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I think, one of the best films that I've ever seen. I think this is maybe even like a top 100, top 200 films of all time. This just like really lines up with what I'm looking for in a film. I think that Jim Carrey is one of the greatest actors of a generation that doesn't get the respect he deserves. I think he kind of sadly falls into the Adam Sandler category. But this film totally shows his range and his potential. And I'm sad that we didn't get more of that, but yeah, I mean, this is an A++ for me. This is one of the greats.
Yeah, I agree. Also great. I don't think I like it. I love it quite as much as you guys do, but still great. So many layers to this. You can talk about it forever. You can break it down forever. I give it a day 9,587 out of day 10,909.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Simple which math. Gets it right in that A range, right? So yeah, this is, I mean, it's a great movie.
I'm with Jake. This is an A++ for me. This is one of my favorite movies of all time. It's got Jim Carrey, it's got Ed Harris, it's got so many things working for it, and a great script and kind of twists and turns and emotional impact that that I want out of movies that are ultimately hopeful and leave you with a sense that if you work for it, you know, you can seek out the best life for yourself. So yeah, that's all we have for our review of The Truman Show. Let's go ahead and get to our content of the week. Trevor, what is your content of the week?
All right, in the spirit of The Truman Show, throw your TV in the garbage.
All right.
Okay, cool.
But seriously though, don't watch reality TV. I'm gonna unrecommend something.
But The Bachelorette is on, Trevor.
The Bachelorette will suck out your soul.
But Trevor, don't, what about Survivor?
Don't watch that garbage. It's all silly.
Shots fired.
I know, right?
You know what? Just for that, I'm recommending all 36 seasons of Survivor.
You can't recommend something five times, Cameron. Four's okay, the limit.
Fine.
Okay. But yes, seriously though, instead of a recommendation, I just want to take some time to really kind of thoughtfully examine your media habits.
Me and my wife have been doing that recently, and it is very important. Yeah, for my recommend this week is going to be the new season of Arrested Development is on Netflix now, starring the amazing Henry Winkler. he's in it. It's not starring him, but he's in it. But yeah, it's season 4. season 4 I think was a misstep for the franchise. There's definitely some redeeming things in it, but it was pretty rough. And season 5 is definitely not like season 1, season 2 level in terms of quality, but I think it's definitely a step in the right direction. If you're a fan of Arrested Development, I think you'll enjoy it. And I think Arrested Development is one of the best shows ever created. So I enjoy it a lot. So check that out.
Awesome. I'm going to recommend the 3rd season of a show that just released this week. It's called Troll Hunters. If you like How to Train Your Dragon, it's very much in that same vein. It's done by DreamWorks. It's a story by Guillermo del Toro. And the 3rd season is the final season, which dropped a couple weeks ago. It is Anton Yelkin's last performance. He recorded 2 seasons and a worth of voice. And then this 3rd season, his voice is in a little bit of it. And then kind of a story moment happens and Emil Hirsch takes over from there, where it's kind of a natural switch in voices. And then other than that, I finished a book this week, an audiobook. It's a very long book. It's called The Name of the Wind. It's a series called The Kingkiller Chronicles. And very good books written by Patrick Rothfuss. The way I kind of described it was, it's almost like Ender's Game set in the world of Lord of the Rings, featuring like a little bit of like Harry Potter type magic stuff.
Interesting.
It's very good. I don't know how long the actual like physical book is. Oh, 662 pages. I know the audiobook's like 27 hours. Ooh.
Don't read anything over 400 words not written by J.K. Rowling.
Okay, cool. Glad to know that. There's a second book in the series called The Wise Man's Fear, and then there's a third book that's supposed to be coming out soon called The Doors of Stone, which will be the final book in this trilogy. So I think Sam Raimi's directing a movie based on it, and Lin-Manuel is working on part of it as well. So got some seriously talented people. So at the end of our episodes, I always like when you guys are giving your ratings, I always try and go to Twitter and just check to make sure there's not any breaking news that we could toss in. And the first thing that popped up was there's a director named Dan Trachtenberg who directed 10 Cloverfield Lane. And the first tweet on my timeline was a tweet that he had quote tweeted, where the guy had tweeted at him, directly at him, and said, 10 Cloverfield Lane is the worst film I have ever seen. My God, it is awful. Really? WTF? My God. And then he just says, I know, right? I'm such a tool. So going back to our whole Kelly Marie Tran conversation, almost 3 years after that movie has come out, and people are still messaging him, telling him how awful his movie is. So,
but not only, but like going out of their way to find him on Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah.
That takes a couple minutes.
We need a new plague.
All right, Dwight. Getting to the end of our episode. If you have enjoyed listening to us, please go to iTunes, subscribe, rate, review us, and go share us with your friends and family. If you guys see a movie together and you're like, hey, I would love to like hear some people talk about this, recommend us. We would love to talk to them about it. If you would want to interact with us more, you can go find us on Twitter at Popcorn Optional or Facebook at Popcorn Optional. We also have a website where you can find all of our episodes as well as links to things at popcornoptional.com. My name is Cameron Slinney. You can find me online at 321 Cami Time. Trevor, where can we find you online?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at TurboTrevor.
Jake.
I am on Instagram at jakebrown.tv, and if you put that in your URL, it'll magically take you to my website. Internet. Magic. Whoa.
The World Wide Web.
All right. Well, we will be back next week with a review, more than likely, of Ocean's 8. If it gets terrible reviews, we may switch things up a little bit and do something different. Until next time, though, we hope you guys have a great week. Watch the movies, and I don't feel like there's a better way to end this than to quote the end of The Truman Show. In case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Bye.